Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends, this is Mr. Michael Dean on April 22nd, Monday, in the year of our Lord, 2013. How you doing there, Nima Vedati?
Doing really well, man. Ready to get it started, let y'all know what it is, drop some mad science about freedom, liberty, and all that good stuff.
The name of this episode is Turn Off the Terror Vision, Turn On the Fiends. Turn On the Fiends.
The Terror Vision.
Man, the Terror Vision is, you know, whenever there's an event, they just take it over 24/7. I mean, I don't even know if it's a grand conspiracy. It's just like what stations do, man, and they just terrorize you with fear, totally with fear.
They stimulate your limbic system. Not because it keeps
overstimulate.
Yeah, exactly. Overstimulate your limbic systems. Keeps you glued to the set, man. I mean, if you're a station manager and you've got an opportunity like this or a crisis that you can have on your air, you know, remember when 9/11 happened, then they had the excuse to put that crawl at the bottom of the screen because people were literally glued to it. It was all 9/11 all the time. And of course, they had other little tidbits at the bottom. But most of the little tidbits were like side branches on the main story about 9/11. And so when something similar like the Boston bombing happens, of course, they're going to have all Boston all the time.
Mainstream news people are vampires, man, because they are not excited or happy on a day when nobody's dying and everyone's doing well.
How do you mean?
I mean, if you're a news reporter and nothing's going wrong, you're kind of like, oh, okay,
what
do I do today? I guess I'll go interview that bureaucrat about the new baseball or, you know, the new uniforms for the Cub Scouts. But if people are dying in horrible ways, you're like, yes, I get to really shine today. Right?
Yeah.
As a former news dude.
I remember that. And I remember feeling sick about it, too. I remember one Sunday, it was either a Sunday or a Saturday morning. You know, weekend stories are always hard to hustle because even if you find something good, bureaucrats and anybody who works the bureaucrat government schedule, they're at home or playing golf on a Saturday or Sunday. You can't get a hold of them. You can't get them to confirm anything. So you can't really do anything hard hitting like that unless you had found out about it ahead of time and gotten their sound on tape before that. On a Saturday, you know, there's nothing. It was dead. I was worried about what I'm going to do that day. And then I hear static and chatter on the police scanner, and I realized something big was going on. And, you know, I had to push it down. My conscience wasn't happy about it, but I was like, you know, hopefully it's something big. And when I got there, it was something huge. It was what they call an officer-involved shooting. Think about the newspeak on that. The officer didn't actually shoot it. He's just involved in the shooting. But what that usually means is the cops killed a dude. And that's what happened. And yeah, it was horrible and it was sad, but I was thankful that I had such a big story that day. And I was the first one on the scene. And I was really happy about my work on it. But yeah, I mean, there was that cognitive dissonance of, you know, in my head, I'm saying, well, thank God something happened. But I mean, at the same time, I was really sad that it had to be that.
Man, I just saw a really scary meme. It's a tank rolling down the street in Boston, a military tank with, I don't know if it's police or military or if there's a difference anymore. You know, like 20 guys clinging off the side of it like they do when they're rolling in somewhere. Right. And it says, oil companies suddenly realize there's oil in America, too. I don't like that. There's not really much oil in Boston. It's all in my state and the surrounding states. So I don't know, man. I really wonder how that would go if they tried to do the door-to-door, we're coming in whether you want it or here or not. I would probably say, I do not consent to this, and then they'd shove me out of the way and come in and do it anyway, and that'd be the end of it. I think there's people who'd resist a little harder than that here.
Well, I mean, what can you do? And it's never
well, good. I think it'd be people would die resisting is what I'm saying. I really do.
I mean, I hope not.
Not a lot of them, but I think there'd be more than in Boston. I also wonder how many quote-unquote illegal weapons they ran across in Boston while doing those searches and if they took them or arrested people.
Well, I saw a funny meme that said neither of the suspected Boston bombers had a legitimate permit for their guns. What a shocker. Criminals don't register their guns. They don't apply for concealed carry permits.
Yeah.
Gee, you
well,
think?
The status think that if they... They think they can put you can put the cow back in the barn. They think it can shut the door on the cats that left the barn. You know, they think that if they make guns incredibly hard to purchase and own, that that there won't be any, and you know, terrorists won't be able to find them. You know, I mean, think of Bonnie and Clyde got their weapons by robbing a National Guard outpost. You know, in Mexico, when they need more weapons, the cartels pull up and bomb a police station and kill all the cops in it and take their weapons. I mean, really determined criminals are going to get weapons no matter what.
Exactly. You can't stop the state. Nobody can stop the flow of the market. They can mutate it and deform it and push it into a black market to where violence becomes the modus operandi, but they can't stop people from getting what they want because they can't stop the profit motive. It's impossible. They can distort it all they want, but people who are desire guns enough or drugs or whatever it is are still going to get them. You can't keep drugs out of prison. You can't stop the market. So it's the same thing with guns as it is with anything else.
There's a squirrel looking at me. It's snowing here again today, man.
Yeah, sucks so, for you.
I want to get off Boston, but I got just one more note. And it is, you know, the title of this is Turn Off the Terror Vision, Turn on the Fiends.
Yeah,
and we're still in the terror vision mode of it, the mainstream news, you know, our take on the mainstream news. So I want to do one more thing and then talk about fun stuff like how my body's falling apart. Because I'm old, like Louis C.K.'s humor is all about. All his humor is about being middle-aged and everything just falling apart. Look at
it's
this.
Great, though.
It is. Look at this image I just sent you. I know you've seen it. It is a gooned police officer in Boston photographed through the barred windows of a house, and he's bringing two unopened gallons, I'm assuming unopened, maybe, I don't know. He has his gallons of milk to the children of the house. He has his thumb on the lids of both of them. Maybe they open him up and put compliacin in him and he's holding it down with his thumbs. But it says, a family with young children in Watertown was out of milk during the lockdown, so the police brought them their milk. You know, like all the other fascist police states tend to do. What do you think of this meme? And what do you think the politics of the person who made it are?
Well, I mean, I think it's a hilarious meme. I think they're obviously making fun of the goon carrying the jugs and saying, because a lot of people shared this same image, and I'm sure our listeners have seen it by now. A lot of people were sharing it and saying things like, well, this just shows the good of humanity. And doesn't this give a good example of the fact that people are just people and they will help others? But that's not what this guy's doing. I mean, he might be taking a little side trip to do something. But, you know, I imagine he had PR in his mind when he was doing this. Obviously, if the people would have came out of the house or not asked for the milk appropriately, things could have gotten bad. I mean, there are some images from this Watertown thing of dudes sitting in tanks pointing their M4s in the windows, like looking in the windows through the scope of their rifles, looking for anybody in the windows that they could possibly shoot. So when you've got guns and you're willing to point them at the same people that you're giving the milk to, I think the giving of the milk is kind of a hollow gesture.
Goon rifles don't really have scopes. They have optics. They have little short. They have red dots. Red. You ever look through a red dot? They're pretty cool. They don't magnify at all. It's 1-to-1 magnification. It's basically just it holograms a little, or you know, superimposes a little red dot. I remember somebody handing me one and showing it to me and said, "Yeah, you just put this red dot on whatever you want to die, and then you pull the trigger." Which, you know, it was a goon telling me that. It was at a gun range. But so here's what I think. I think you're wrong about that. This I think this was made by a statist, and it was shared. I think the first sharing of it was on a statist website. It was about class warfare, actually, but it was a very statist site. I think that you were seeing this through your anarchy colored glasses and saying, this is obviously you know, made by a libertarian. This is not, you know, no, it was made by a statist.
Your argument is it's the statist saying this cop should be doing his job and pointing guns at people, not doing socialist things like bringing milk to families.
No, it's a cop. It's a statist saying, y'all shut up about saying this is a police state. This is not a police state. That's what the meme is about. Although I guess it got shared by both quote unquote sides. Kind of like when Bart Simpson ran for class president and his opponent had a big scary sign that said, "A vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy." And then Bart had a sign that said, "A vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy."
Right. Of course, a vote for anarchy is a contradiction in concepts. But I see your point. Okay, yeah, maybe you're right. The punchline of the meme is, "So the police brought them milk," you know, like all the other fascist police states tend to do.
Yeah.
I guess they could be saying, "Well, okay, guys, would a fascist police state bring you milk?" Obviously, no. You know, that doesn't ring true to me, because that's what fascism is. It's the state provides your goods, or the state
literally
controls the markets that do provide you your goods. Of course, they're not really markets at that point. They're fascist central planning goonery. So I don't know. I think that rings false if that's what he's saying. Because, yeah, man, fascism to me is a form of socialism, and that's what it is. It's the people who own the guns distributing the goods, because in a non-fascist, non-police state, you wouldn't have a dude with an assault rifle strapped to his front and a sidearm bringing you your milk with the threat that if you do the wrong thing, he would use those against you. Now, you would go to a store and there might be a guard with guns as security, but he would smile at you and understand that you have the freedom to go there, purchase something or not purchase something, and walk out unmolested.
Yeah, I mean, in a police state, it doesn't shut down for the people who are compliant. I mean, I think what this person is saying is like, yeah, they did the officers in the concentration camps didn't bring fresh milk to the Jews. You know, they just let them eat stale bread and rats that they could catch, which is true, and let them die before, or killed who didn't die. So I do think that there's a problem with the terminology of fascist here, and whoever made this doesn't understand history. And, you know, kind of like you pointed out, like a vote for anarchy is a contradiction, which I think we've come further in our understanding, because when I brought that up a couple years ago, that Bart Simpson thing, we just laughed at it and didn't neither of us pointed that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean the stores don't all close in a fascist police state, or not for very long. I mean, in Red Dawn, you know,
there was Subway. Yeah.
You know, in Red Dawn, there's still the stuff open, but there's like, you know, goons with guns who will shoot you if they overhear you saying something you don't like in there standing around.
Right.
I'm sure there'd be food in the FEMA camps, although I think in some of the FEMA event camps when there was a natural disaster, there wasn't a lot of food. But
although the interesting thing is, even in prison camps and things like that, there are spontaneous markets that pop up. I think it's a somewhat well-known story of, I think it was an American POW camp somewhere in the European front during World War II. And they all had, you know, these ration boxes that the guards would give them. And they had a number of goods in them. And people would hoard the things they didn't want and trade them. So the people who did the best were people who didn't smoke. Because what they did was they would hoard the packs of cigarettes from their ration boxes, and then they would use the cigarettes to trade with the smokers for hard candy or whatever it was. So no matter what you do, even if you're in a World War II Nazi prisoner of war camp, there's still going to be spontaneous markets that pop up, because what's valuable to me is not necessarily what's valuable to you. And so if we trade what we have, we can each get what's more valuable to me, and you can get what's more valuable to you, and we're both better off. That's the win-win situations we try to push. That's what the market provides, as opposed to shut up and drink your government milk.
Yeah.
You know, at the point of a gun.
Well, that's kind of what schools are becoming. Shut up and drink your government milk at the point of a gun. I mean, they have cops in schools, and if they arrest you if you skip class, and yeah. Did you know that you can smoke cigarettes in Wyoming prisons and jails?
Like inside of the prisons? You have to wait till your yard time?
No.
All right.
Which is kind of weird, because a lot of states you can't do that now, and California was the first to ban it. And they banned it under we don't want, you know, the reason it passed was we don't want to give anybody any incentives in jail. It should be punishment. But really the reasons behind it were, you know, we own people and can tell them what to do, and we can't tell people outside of jail not to smoke it, but we can do it in jail. And actually the police guard, the guard union, the people that work in the jails fought against it, because they want people to be able to smoke, because they're a lot less confrontational, you know.
the nicotine calms them.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really weird thing in humans that even when
some of them were probably bringing them in and selling them too.
Right, right.
That's
I'm
how
sure
it always
they
is.
Smuggling.
That's how it always is in the TV shows.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's a really weird thing in humans that even when they're tyrannizing somebody or controlling somebody, there's still some leftover truncated sense of humanity, however misguided it is. They still, for some reason, think they own you and want to keep you alive. And, you know, and one of the things I'm thinking of is there was this, it was a horrible article in the sense that it was describing a horrible thing, but it was a good article and it was good work that needed to be done. But there was a guy in prison on hunger strike. He claimed he was innocent and shouldn't be on death row and shouldn't be set to die. So what he did is if I'm going to die, it's going to be on my own terms. I'm going on a hunger strike. And what they did was every day they would pin him down, strap him to a bed, and force feed him through a tube.
Yeah, man. They say when you die, you don't get to say that. They own you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so somebody, I'm sure, some bureaucrat who's never seen the guy and is writing policy papers or directives from a cushy office is saying something like, we need to keep this guy healthy and alive until we get to kill him. You know, that's how misguided it is. But they still feel like, we got to keep him full of vitamin, full Ensure, and get his protein levels up and all this nonsense.
You know, or it's conflicting desires. Like maybe they're force fed because some ACLU attorney who doesn't believe in the death penalty, and believes in ethical treatment of prisoners, the way that gets done in a bureaucracy is some lawyer sues and says, you have to keep them alive and give them enough food to live. And that in a bureaucracy, a prison bureaucracy, a government bureaucracy, that turns into, all right, we got to force them to live. It's in this law.
Which is part of the problem with top-down incentive structures like the state is based upon. I'm thinking right now of what's going on in Guantanamo. I mean, there's a massive hunger strike because most of these guys have already been cleared for release, but Obama won't shut down Guantanamo. Yeah. He won't release these people because he's scared like a little girl that the Republicans will call him names. So he won't release the folks in Guantanamo. And these guys have no hope left. I mean, they've already been cleared as innocent non-combatants who are ready for release, and yet they're still in Guantanamo, in lockdown in a prison camp. So they're trying to call attention to this by doing a hunger strike. The director of the prison has actually called this an act of asymmetrical warfare, as if these guys who are doing the hunger strike in an American prison camp are committing a war crime by going on hunger strike to call attention to their plight.
That's some lawyer looking for a reason to keep him there. You know, I had an idea. It was like a weird little, not fantasy, but just what if. I said before, I wonder who Obama's going to pardon his last week. What if this accused Boston bomber gets convicted and sentenced to death, and then Obama frees him on his last week in office.
Huh. I would kind of like it. Why on earth would he do that,
though? I don't know. I'd kind of like it because it would make people kind of see him in the light we see him. I don't think he'd do it, though. I think he's like, I got one. he's laughing like George Bush. Yeah. I mean, he's like George Bush in every other way except gay marriage and free healthcare. Although George Bush was kind of a free healthcare guy. I mean, he did the Prescription
Medicare,
Act.
And, yeah. Medicaid Part D.
Yeah. He just did it for old people, not young people. So, although the young people are going to pay the most under Obama. You know, people who are 19 are going to have all their taxes are going to go up. Their wages are going to go down. They're not going to be able to find a job as easy because no one will hire them. Young people are going to get screwed to pay for my medical problems. And let's talk about my medical problems. I'm done with Boston, man.
Segway.
Yeah.
All right. Go for it. Tell me how your body's falling apart.
I lost
Sam Bell and Moon.
From what?
From like Sam Bell and Moon. Is your hair coming out in chunks?
No. I still look okay. I lost a filling last night while I was eating Swedish fish. You know, those gummy red licorice fish?
I love Swedish fish, yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, it was one of the cheap fillings I got in Tijuana at the nail salon about 15 years ago. But, okay. Yeah.
I don't have any fillings. I've never had a dentist tell me I've had a cavity. I mean, I probably haven't been to the dentist in 3 years or so, but I went pretty regularly until about 3 or 4 years ago and never had one.
Hey, I just want to interject something more about this meme I just discovered, and then we'll go back to me and my rotting body.
Okay. Sure.
I didn't notice this, but okay, the page that this was originally posted on is called I Acknowledge Class Warfare Exists. And a lot of the comments on it are things like, this page is deviating further and further from its original purpose, and I'm about one stupid meme from dumping you guys. There's not much good left about you. So what I think happened is somebody started this socialist page. It got really popular, and then they got kind of aware of that there's a police state and it's a problem, and they're pissing off their original fans. That's good.
Right. Well, I mean, they could clarify that because I acknowledge class warfare exists. I just don't take the oversimplified Marxist approach of what the class warfare is or
what the government
are.
Although actual leftist anarchists blame the government too, but the watered down version of that is blaming corporations and then saying that everything should be run by the workers, which basically is a unionocracy, which basically in its own way is a form of fascism. Because fascism is the government. Fascism in general, people think it means totalitarianism, and it usually does include that. But there's different kinds of fascism. For instance, communist China at the height of its communism all the time before it was opened up a bit. I mean, it's still a tyrannical place to live, but you can sort of own things now, and especially if it helps the government for you to own them. But under communist China,
it's like America. You can own things until the government decides to take them away. but at least there's not a principle against ownership.
Yeah, and there they'd take it away for what we're doing. Like right now, if we were in China doing this podcast about China in Chinese, what we're doing about America and all governments here, soldiers would come in and take our equipment and our house and throw us in a work camp. Yeah. But
that makes me want to clarify my previous statement real quick before you get into the meat of that. I guess you don't really own anything if there's a structure above you that can take it away at any time, because as Butler Schaefer stated in Boundaries of Order, the true owner of something is someone who can be in the right when they destroy the thing they own at any time. And the state claims the right to destroy you, your own body, at any time they feel like it, or take your house at any time they feel like it, or take your car or anything you have cash. Even if you have cash on you, they can take it as an asset forfeiture because it could have been used in a drug deal.
I don't need to quote Butler Schaefer on that. I'll quote The Fiends on that. We had an episode.
The Fiends, okay.
We had an episode because this is Turn Off the Terror Vision, Turn On the Fiends is the name of this episode. You know, it ain't She Watch Channel Zero. It's She Watch Channel Fiend. We had an episode called Property Rights Are Just an Easement, and that kind of nails it. It's like, you know, an easement is, let's say you own property where your house and ranch is that's completely surrounded by someone else's ranch and there's only one or two roads into it, you have an easement on paper which says the other person gives you the right to pass on that road, on that private road. And that's what property rights are in America and pretty much in every country now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really sad. It's not real property rights in the Lockean sense, you know?
Yeah.
So you can go on with your point about China if you'd like.
Well, I was going to talk about my health problems, but and I'm not going to beg for money, even though I don't have health insurance because it's the government's fault. Not that the government needs to give it to me. It's the government's fault. I can't afford it. So
yeah, exactly.
So China, under fascism, my understanding of fascism is there's still private ownership of businesses, but they're completely controlled by the government and can be taken at any time. But, you know, your factory produces what the government tells it to, and you get to keep some profit of it. In communism, there is no private ownership of companies and factories.
Right. Yeah, fascism really reminds me of when Republicans or some Beltway libertarians say something like, we need to privatize this industry or that industry. They never mean take the government completely out of it. What they mean is give somebody who's a private citizen all the profits from it is really all they mean. So it becomes
control
sort of a corporatist
it.
Or mercantilist kind of a thing.
Mercantilism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they always give it to some crony friend of theirs too. They always you know, they're not going to say, "Hey, let's let Nima Vidati run the trains," you know.
Right.
And whoever they give it, quote unquote, or sell it to, they still have total control and regulation over everything they do with it.
Well, and licensing. I mean, you can't really. People call things privatization, but how is it private at all if you don't let anybody who wants to attempt to get into that market do it without having some kind of prior restraint or government licensure? Because all that does, in essence, is keep it from being a market phenomenon and have the government give sanction to something that, well, you can do this or you can't. You have to get anointed by the throne, so to speak, before you can actually do any business. It's like the mafia protection rackets, you know? You got to give us a cut or we're going to go burn your thing down.
So before we talk about my health problems more, I want to talk about what I meant to say at the top, which is that the Ben Stone Bad Quaker Top 50 episode torrent archive is up. And I'm going to put a link to that in here. And if you're a torrenter, please download it and seed it to help keep him drone-proof in through eternity. And if you're not a torrenter, there's a link at the link. I'm going to put, you know, click on the link and then go to the link and learn how to torrent. And, you know, when you're at work or when you're asleep, you can leave your computer on and share Ben and the fiends and help keep him drone-proof. Because the way the torrenting works is it doesn't keep stuff in a central server. So let's say CISPA decides to shut down the fiends. The fiends do not cease to exist and be available. That's what torrenting is. Basically, you and everyone else around the world becomes the server for it. So then they'd drone you.
Right.
No, they wouldn't drone you. There'd be too many of you. So be one of the many.
Yeah, exactly.
And use a VPN if you want.
It's horizontal. Go ahead. You can use a VPN.
You can use Bolehv VPN, Boleh VPN. There's a link on the Fiend site. And that'll keep you private, so they can't really tell who's torrenting it.
Yes. An excellent concept. And Ben is a genius. I love Ben. And he is probably my favorite on the pure theory as far as it goes. And he's really good at explaining it. So if you haven't, I know most of our listeners are crossover listeners with Ben. So I'm preaching to the choir. But if you're a Fiend fan and you haven't gotten a chance to listen to Ben Stone, the top 50, and I think there's actually some more in there. There's some that he was filling
52.
In for me.
Yeah. I mean, 52. He's filled in several times for you on the Fiends, and he's done three or four gumbos. I picked the best two gumbos and the best two Fiends with Ben and put them in there too.
Okay. And, great. Yeah, but if you haven't heard Ben yet, this is the perfect primer. Go through these 50 or a few of them, you know, that sound good to you. My personal favorites are his series on war. It's just amazing. It's an amazing thing because I feel like the way history is taught about the American wars or the wars that the U.S. government has perpetrated, that's sort of the founding myth, the foundational myth of the current American state is that this war happened and we did the good thing and this war was a great thing and it increased our freedom and we were the good guys in the world. We're like Superman saving the world from the evil Dr. Octopus. I'm mixing comic books there, but I couldn't think of a good Superman villain. Lex Luthor, there you go. And so, you know, a lot of people, when they're minarchists or when they're still statists, they buy these foundational myths of the U.S. government being this force for good. And they're like the X-Men, only cooler, and they can give you good things. And they're heroes. People put them up on a pedestal as if they're great men or heroes, these state actors. But what they really are is liars and thieves and murderers. And it's been proven if you put the actual facts in the right order and analyze them the right way, it becomes completely apparent. The thing is, the facts are cherry-picked and the inconvenient or inconvenient facts are ignored in the school textbooks. So you've been lied to. And go ahead and listen to Ben and you can hear the full truth. And then I defy you to still love the state because I doubt you will.
And before we go to the market, I want to say that unlike other theorists who are excellent theorists, Ben is an excellent theorist who's not really a theorist because he carries a gun. And to the fiends, you're just a theorist unless you carry a gun.
Yeah. Worms. Although you could be we need a word for that. A theorist who practices what he preaches.
A practitioner.
A real fiend.
A real fiend, man. I'd just say a real fiend, man. All right, let's go to the market.
Okay. All right.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Should decisions on what you put in your body be left up to people whose very job depends on keeping certain plants illegal? Or do you believe in freedom of ingestion? The Janome Project is a cannabis science community founded by a leading DNA scientist. Get the app by searching Jane-Ohm on iTunes. The app is only $1.99 and all proceeds go to furthering and disseminating scientific truth. You must be 17 or older to download the app. Search Janome on iTunes. That's Jane-Ohm.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
So, my health problems. Even the Mona Lisa's falling apart, as they say in Fight Club. I lost.
Is it really, though?
I don't know. I lost a filling last night.
Yeah.
So.
So bummer.
Yeah. So
what
bummer.
Is that? What does that mean for you? Like, do you feel that there's a hole in a tooth? Like,
well, I never really got how it that did. Works. It did. It doesn't hurt, which sometimes they are extremely painful, and this did not, which is good. I mean, I can't. I made a dental appointment. I don't have it until like 2 weeks from now, and It's a couple days before we go on radio. Hopefully, I'm not like. Still, when you get back, but
like whistling when you talk, like Job in Arrested Development.
Yeah,
is there a de whistle function on your preamp? Just
no,
a little preset,
maybe.
Nah, probably not.
Yeah,
yeah. But, any other health problems, man? Are you falling apart?
Yeah,
at the seams?
I believe that I'm getting carpal tunnel.
Ah. Well, how many times do you click a day? You got your mouse counter on?
Did I? Let me see if I still have mouse count. Oh, yeah, I didn't uninstall it. Let's see. Well, so far today, I've done 974 clicks. Oh, average 4,500 clicks a day.
Wow.
And, you know, really, I mean, it's a cumulative thing. And I've been on computers for, you know, how many years? 17 years, something like that. Since 91, although my first computer didn't have a mouse. So let's say I've had a mouse computer since 96. So 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So 17 years. I kind of blame the Fiends. I don't blame the Fiends. And I guess I'm saying that I'm suffering for the Fiends art. And it's a really friggin' serious thing. It's like I have good days and bad days, but there's days I can't pick up a gallon of milk with my right hand. It's only my right hand because that's when I use the most for mousing. And, you know, pleasuring. But, it's sometimes it's not painful at all. Sometimes, like, picking up, you know, a glass of coffee, like, hurts. And I have to set it down and use my other hand. And it is from accumulation of 17 years of computer work. But
yeah,
I have done more clicks per day, every day, with the Fiends, without getting up and resting and things like that. Making this happen. And I feel like I'm really seriously suffering from our art with this.
Well, you're a fighter, man, and we all appreciate it. I know all of this, us fiends out there, me, the capital F fiend, and all the lowercase f listeners and helpers out there love what you do, Michael, and we really appreciate it. And it's sad that you're in pain, but you know, thanks, man. Thanks. Thank you for your service and thank you for your sacrifice.
Yeah.
Are there things you can do? I mean, from maybe a holistic level, stretching of your fingers or anti-inflammatory. I mean, I always take ibuprofen. I know it's a good painkiller and anti-inflammatory that's over the counter and easy to get and doesn't kill your liver as much as something like Tylenol or acetaminophen. Not the brand name Tylenol, but that drug itself, as far as I know. I mean, have you looked into what you can do?
The problem is pain exists for a reason. And if you take that kind of pain medication, then you go work more. I'm watching a squirrel run through snow on a roof. It's pretty funny, man. He disappeared in the snow on the roof for a minute and then came out. He like tunneled running down this roof.
Nice.
And now he's on the top of the telephone pole wagging his tail like, I made it. They're so athletic, man. I mean, I'll take it if I need it. I take it for my back sometimes, Ibo, but I kind of don't like to take a drug that does touches every cell in your body to get like one little nerve in your hand. It seems weird to me. I mean, I'm not going to not do it, but it's also like there's the tendency of the pain is there for a reason and it's telling you to lay off something. And if you take pain medication and then keep doing it and overdoing it, it's going to get worse. I mean, it's
right.
There is surgery for it, but it's really expensive. I don't have health insurance and It doesn't always work, and it's basically they go in and snip something in your hand. It's also, I'm a little concerned that with time, it's going to make it harder to accurately fire a gun because it, it's from using my mouse finger, which is your trigger finger. So,
right.
So, may have to learn to shoot left-handed
or click with your middle finger or your pinky finger.
Yeah.
You start using another finger. You can train your hands. I mean, you used to play guitar and piano and bass.
Not left-handed. Oh, but with the other fingers? Yeah.
Yeah, with the other fingers. Yeah. Or the other hand. Is it just one hand that has the pain?
Yeah. And I mouse with my left hand a lot. I switch my my mouse over and use it. And I'm sure a bunch of people are going to send me a bunch of holistic suggestions and crap. And here's my request with that. I only want to hear from you on that if you're a doctor or if you
have had the same problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to hear the, oh, I read this article or my aunt's billy goat had that. You know, if you have that, that's basically my thing with advice. If you're an expert or if you have had the problem and successfully dealt with it, I'd love to hear about it. But I think I should have two F's in front of my fiends for this. I get okay. the purple fiend heart.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
I'm a fiend.
Purple heart.
Fiend. Yeah.
There you go.
So let's go on to happier things. Well, let's talk about how Louis C.K., most of his humor is basically about how he's falling apart in the same age as me.
I was going to bring that up. He's got a bit about his ankle and how he goes to the doctor and the doctor's like, well, you got to make sure you stretch it every morning and that'll hopefully help a little bit. And Louis's like, okay, how long do I have to do that? And the doctor goes, oh, forever. Your ankle just sucks now.
Like, yeah, that's something you do now. You stretch.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, you know, if I was young, you know, if you're 20, they have all kinds of surgery. They'll make you a new ankle out of your earlobe. But, you know, if you're over 40, they're like, well, sorry. It sucks now. You suck now.
Yeah.
And he said to the doctor, Doc, what if I were an athlete? And the doctor interrupted him and said, you're not an athlete. Or you're no athlete.
Right.
Yeah.
I love Louis, man. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Have you seen the because I know you saw the two specials, but his sitcom.
Oh, I've been watching it.
Oh, really?
It's not quite as good as the specials. You know, because he had to come up with something every week instead of having the same jokes for a whole tour or whatever. But it's really got its high points. And, you know, I'm addicted to something, I'll even watch the watered down, you know, I'll drink the watered down version of it when there's a lot of it.
The thing is I don't think it's watered down. I think it's kind of dark and avant-garde. It's not like any other sitcom I've seen. I mean,
he goes places nobody would go, man. I mean, one is like, I couldn't believe this. It's not him telling the joke, but he has a friend. I forget who he has a lot of other comedians on there. And it always starts with him in the Comedy Cellar, which is an actual club in New York, doing stand up to like 40 people or something. And one time he has one of his buddies, it's Nick somebody, warm up for him. And the guy is
the Italian guy, Nick DiPaolo.
Yeah, Nick DiPaolo. And Nick DiPaolo is a Republican. And he's like bitching at people for voting for Obama and having white guilt. And he's like, and y'all are even talking about having a holiday for him already. Like, oh, Obama Day. Hell, they haven't even shot him yet. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, whoa, did you really say that and get away with it on TV? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you think the Secret Service visited Nick DiPaolo? They'll probably visit us for just telling that he told that joke. And I'm kind of saying I was kind of shocked at it. Like, whoa, man.
Right.
But, you know, there was somebody. Oh, it was the other redheaded ginger ass Irish American comic.
Bill Burr.
Yeah. He was talking about how people complain like, oh, your humor goes too far. And he's like, you know, if somebody does cool, dangerous tricks on a motorcycle and you really like it, do you say, oh, you shouldn't jump the Grand Canyon? That's going too far. No, you take it as far as you can, man. And if some people don't like it, that's why there's more than one comic in the world. You know, you go listen to the other ones. Yeah.
And that's part of what comedy is for, isn't it? I mean, comedy sort of pushes on the edges and the boundaries and gets a feel for what's acceptable and not. And if a comedian says things that are just beyond the can, eventually, you know, if society can't bear that or the market can't bear that, nobody will listen to him and he'll stop doing comedy.
Yeah, and he's apparently doing well because he says that he drives a Lexus and he thinks every day about how he could sell his Lexus, get a good car, a good Ford, and have $20,000 left over and save a bunch of starving children. And then he goes, F it every single day and doesn't care.
Who, Louis?
Yeah. And, you know, it gets back to that thing of like humor. Psychiatrists say, and it's one of the few things I believe that they say, that humor laughter is an innate reaction to deal with the fear of death without knowing that's why it is. And a lot of Louis's humor is about death and its inevitability. So I really believe that with him. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you've got this thing that makes death less scary, if somebody does it really far and makes death really less scary, is that going too far?
I don't think so at all. And the thing about comedy, for me at least, is it's about honesty. It's about reaching into the depths, even the dark depths of your soul and your mind, and pulling something out and sharing it to people. And that openness, that exposure, I think that's what builds the connection between a comic and the audience. And, you know, if you identify with him, if he says something that you've thought before and been guilty to think it or felt bad about thinking it, but there's some guy on stage just showing the whole world and telling the whole world, you have this bond with them. And I think it helps people, the audience, define who they are more by or identify. And it sort of bounces around the edges of what humanity really is. And I think real good comedy is really important to society, or humor in general. I mean, before stand-up comedy, I mean, this kind of stuff was important. It was important to laugh and to figure out what was going on in the world at the time and what was going on in the society at the time. And without people to say what their innermost, even if they were dark, what their innermost thoughts were, it's hard to get a real sense of what's really going on, because other people in society, politicians, corporate masters, none of them will ever reach down into the dark depths and say something of any real honesty. They will just tell you whatever they have to say to further their own power or further their own pocketbook. And so that's why I find comedy so refreshing, is because it's the exact opposite of any of that.
Yeah. There's people who think The Fiends are comedy. I mean, some people would jokingly say that about anything they disagree with, but some people think that we're funny enough to be in the world of comedy.
I take that as a compliment completely.
I don't think, and that, I think that's not funny, man.
No, I do. And you know, that's kind of how I justify the fact that we could talk about squirrels having sex, or, you know, what my wife said about our stray cat that's living on our couch squatter, or all these things.
Or what I said about the cat peeing all over your shoes. And we said that on the cast, but we didn't say you have a pee-pee kitty.
A pee-pee kitty, yeah. Or tranny hookers and crocodile, or any of that stuff that sounds like, what, you guys are a show about political theory? What? No. Why are you talking about cats and squirrel sex? Well, it's because I think comedy is about honesty, and the way we portray our thoughts on, you know, social theory or whatever, we want to come from a point of honesty and the world as we see it. So I think it's all in the same boat. It's all the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're funny enough often enough that we could say we're political comedy and go on tour doing it. But I do like making fun of stuff. And, you know, really, it's like, if I can't laugh for your revolution, I don't want any part of it. For me, a lot of dealing with, I guess we're dealing with the fear of death, because right now it's gotten to the point where the government can kill you for no reason and get away with it.
Yeah.
And I respect what people like Alex Jones do, but it makes me horrified and listening to it, because it's so serious. And I think there's room for more than one political commentator in the world. And yeah, I think there's different flavors. And there are a lot of people that used to listen to really serious stuff like him and now mostly listen to The Fiends because by the end of the show, they feel better, not more scared, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way I've always approached things that scare me. I think you're spot on with that. You know, in middle school and, well, not really in high school. In high school, I was kind of cool. But in middle school, I sometimes got picked on. You know, I got thrown in a dumpster. And I realized that if I made people laugh, they would stop picking on me. You know, if I told a joke or two or said something funny, even unintentionally, And it's something I picked up on at a very early age, that if you can make somebody laugh, all of a sudden they're in your corner, they're on your side, and they see you as they have a connection with you then. If they laugh at you, that's a commiseration between you and them. So I think that's part of what humor can do on a broader scale, is if we can make the public conversation be laughing at the tyranny, then eventually we'll win more of the tyrannizers over to our side, if that's possible. And the people who are scared are more powerful and less paralyzed if they're making fun of their oppressors, rather than if they're cowering in fear underground because they're worried about dealing with any interaction. I mean, there's no social use for an agoraphobe, somebody who just sits inside all day and doesn't interact with humanity.
I sit inside all day and don't
But you do interact with humanity. That's what you do all day.
Over a microphone.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. You're putting yourself out there. And see, that just goes to show you, you know, you don't want to get out and about and do things, but you do make it your life's passion to be able to get your voice heard by as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's well said, man. And, you know, some of my favorite political commentators who I think have had some of the most right on stuff working within what they knew without knowing the non-aggression principle per se have been comedians. And George Carlin comes to mind. He's always been amazing to me. And he actually was in one of his pieces, The Seven Words You Can't Say on Television, Seven Dirty Words, it's called. It's a bit. Actually led to a Supreme Court ruling, district court ruling. No, it went to the Supreme Court. Basically opening up radio to where you can cuss in the middle of the night on it. And you know what station that lawsuit was brought against? KPFK, all communism,
really?
All the time. Absolutely. Yep. It was the Pacifica Foundation, which is the parent company that owns those five stations. They're all KPF something, but it was KPFK in Berkeley. Yep. Or in Los Angeles.
That's hilarious.
All communism all the time.
Right. Bill Hicks, too. Bill Hicks had some great critiques of, you know, he wouldn't call it the state, but a lot of it was that's what he was critiquing, you know. Oh, and he has a bit that was it's kind of our denaturing bit. He had a bit about, you know, if you outlaw something like pot or mushrooms that grow out of nature, isn't that like outlawing, or he goes, isn't that a bit, I don't know, unnatural?
Yeah.
You know?
He was kind of statist, though, because he didn't know better. Wasn't he one of those like, yeah, and you just sit around and you don't vote. You need to get out and vote and change this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like you said, he did the best with what he had, but he must have never come across the non-aggression principle or anything like that. You know, his heart might have been in the right place, but he also said things like, I think he has a statement where he basically says, you know, I lean a little to the left, I'm for raising the bar for everybody, or something to that effect. And I think what he meant was, you know, we should have a higher bottom so people can't fall, you know, like a safety net kind of thing. But it's kind of ironic that if you say something like that, raising the bar, it's almost what you're saying is we're going to raise the hurdles that people have to jump over in order to get a better life. And I think that that's funny, because that's what statism and social safety nets and socialism actually do, is they don't raise the bottom that you can fall to. Instead, what they do is they erect a higher hurdle for you to jump in to a better life.
Whereas George Carlin said something that I came up with independently, and we had a cast called this, and then found out he had a bit on it and I'd never heard of it. He said, and I quote, I don't vote. On election day, I stay home. I firmly believe that if you vote, you have no right to complain.
Yes.
Now, some people twist that around. They say, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent politicians and they get into office and screw everything up, you're responsible for what they have done. You voted them in. You caused the problem. You have no right to complain. On the other hand, if you did not vote, those who didn't even leave the house on election day are in no way responsible for what those politicians have done.
Yep. And in our discussion on that, you know, imagine, if you will, if nobody voted, because that's what politicians can point to. You know, it's been said that all governments, even tyrannies, rest on the consent of the governed, because people have to obey in order for them to get any of their edicts passed.
If nobody voted, it wouldn't solve the problem, because, you know, they would, the politicians and their families would just go vote and say, yes, the president was elected 7-6. And, you know, but I really think the really important part of that is what Carlin said of you're responsible for the wrongs of the world if you vote. Mm-hmm. And if you have any kind of like pick the lesser of two evils BS, you're really, you're just basically saying, I think a little bit of murder is okay.
Yes, exactly. Or a little bit of rape.
And it's really not a little bit of murder. It's, you know, a tiny bit of murder less in this situation than the other guy and a tiny bit more in that situation.
Well, and that's just the fantasy. I mean, you can't ever prove that. I mean, there's no way to prove that Senator McCain would have killed more people than Barack Obama. I mean, Barack Obama has killed more people with drones than Bush ever did.
We never gave him the chance. Poor guy.
Yeah, yeah. Although he's still chomping at the bit. He's still one of the most vocal warmongers out there. Him and Lindsey Graham, the ambiguously gay duo of mass murder.
I really like this joke that Louis C.K. said. He said something about like, yeah, I was talking to this girl who thinks she's dark and spooky. And I'm like, man, you're just a tourist in misery. You're Jane Fonda on a tank. I'm Senator McCain in the cage. I'm John McCain in the bamboo cage of misery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, so I had a tiny little anecdote that I found interesting. The other night I was DJ. In fact, I've got two anecdotes on this one point. I'll go
wickety wickety woo, man. You've been DJing.
Yeah, fresh and all that stuff. But the point I want to make is that you know, Ben Stone makes the point that natural law is natural because it's internal to us and we recognize it inherently, the way a butterfly can get back thousands of miles to its original forest, or the way that a duck knows north from south without having to GPS it. And this is a good point that also exists in humans, I think, is when a rule, even not a state appointed rule, but when somebody in regular society with no real authority or even with some tiny bit of authority gives an edict that doesn't jive with people's natural sense of law or justice, people will find great loopholes or ways around it, or they will completely ignore it when that other person isn't watching. And here's my two examples. I was DJing a wedding, right? And part of the family, I think they were the family groom, I'm not sure, was from Wisconsin. And so they had a specific way they wanted to do things. And one of their traditions was they wanted me to announce what's called a dollar dance. And I'd never heard of this before, but apparently the way it works is the bride and groom are on the dance floor. And if you want to dance with them or have some alone time, not alone time, but, you know, face-to-face time with the bride or the groom, you go give a dollar or more, you know, if you want to spend more time, you know, 20 or 50, 100, and then you get to dance with them. And the idea was do this for a few slow songs. But in the middle of the third slow song, the Wisconsin lady comes up and she's like, no, they don't get it. They're doing it wrong. And I do a really horrible Midwest accent because I haven't spent any time there, but you get the point. And the Wisconsin lady said, no, what they're supposed to do is it's only supposed to be the bride and groom and whoever paid money on the dance floor. Nobody else should be on the dance floor. So she was basically saying it should be a monopoly, and she said, you know, announce it right now. And it was in the middle of the third song, and the dance floor was full. And I'm like, I'm not going to tell everybody to leave the dance floor now.
I'm picturing like a needle ripping across a record, and like, I have an announcement that isn't very fun, and I'm going to be the death of the party because. Yeah.
And that's like what DJ 101. You don't clear the dance floor. I mean,
you clear the dance floor and say, don't dance. Don't dance at this dance event.
Right. Oh, and I mean, that's the real job.
She really, like, her thing was like, if you didn't pay, you don't get to dance. I mean, were people crashing the wedding or what?
No, she was just like, that's the way it's supposed to work. I guess she thought it would incentivize people to pay more money. Like, oh, I got to get on the dance floor. I really want to dance to this song, so I'm going to go pay money. But okay, when you're a wedding DJ, that is your job, is to get people on the dance floor. And it can be hard sometimes, you know, if people are eating cake or you don't have a good crowd or it's a small crowd, people are less.
And you had them all out there and she wanted
you
to make everyone go outside and come in and show their stamp or pay, basically.
Right. And so I waited till the song was over and I made an announcement. It was kind of funny. I wanted it to be like, well, that was really cute, but it's wrong.
I would have made her make the announcement. I would have waited. I would have said, okay, well, you here, I'll hand you the mic as soon as the song's over.
It's not always good to do that except with toasts because it kind of breaks the flow. People are used to hearing from me and I got a rapport with them. So what I did was I said, that was really beautiful, folks. And those three songs were great. We've been doing it slightly wrong, but it's house rules. So it's not a big deal at all. You know, the house rules, you can get out of anything with that. House rules, you know, whatever. Play the way you want to play. And I was like, but we're going to try to do it the more traditional way for the fourth song here. We will do a fourth song. And you can't be on the dance floor unless you paid to dance with, and you can only dance with the bride or the groom, so it should ideally be four people on the dance floor. We're going to try that for just one song here, folks. Be patient, bear with us, and then we'll open it up and everybody can dance. It'll be great. And everybody was like, oh, okay. And so at first, you know, it was just like I said, but the most beautiful spontaneous thing happened. What people started to do instead was they would go pay their money, and then somebody would just glom on to the bride and groom already. So at first there was the bride dancing with a guy, the groom dancing with a girl. People would pay and they would just add. So it was a group dance. So then there were three people, you know, two people dancing with the bride, two people dancing with the groom, and people caught on and they started doing that. So what you had at the end was you had two huddles of people all hugging and dancing. So there was everybody who wanted to be on the dance floor was on the dance floor, but they were all still technically dancing with the bride or the groom. They just spontaneously found this way of making the rule, the silly rule, pointless, and did it anyway. It was heartwarming, I must say.
The market took care of it. So did the lady get irked who told you to do that?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell. She didn't come say anything to me. So I don't know if she was stewing in her own juices in the corner somewhere. But she did. She was the person who gave me a $100 tip at the end of the night. So she couldn't have been too irked.
Wow. That's weird, too, because it sounds like she was a penny pincher, but then she gave you a bunch of pennies.
Yeah, there you go.
I think she was more of a control freak than a penny pincher, it sounds like.
She really was. I mean, at the beginning, right? So some locales that you DJ weddings at are kind of tough because you got to do the ceremony and the reception, and they'll be in the same, like technically the same location, but the ceremony's outside, and then like 200-300 yards away is an indoor reception house. So I got to break down my whole gear, all my setup, and it takes like 10 to 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you know, and I have to run all this, you know, my turntables in their coffin, it's like 70 pounds. I got to run
that
over.
You need an assistant. You need to get like, what you got to do is when you get there, you have to find like the nephew that's like, you know, 12 or older who could lift something, who looks like he wishes he wasn't there, and befriend him and then make him your roadie.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
And then pay him in whiskey. No, I'm kidding.
But so I'm sitting there carrying all this heavy gear by myself, and she looks at me once I get inside and she's all like, there's no music in here. You're going to put some music on? I'm like, well, I got to set up. And she's like, can't you just like play something off your phone right now? Because it's really ridiculous that there's no music.
So you just held your phone up.
Well, luckily the place had its own PA, which was really upsetting because they had good PA speakers, they had an amp, they had a mixer, but everything was inaccessible. They had all, you know, the back, it was in a rack mount and you couldn't get to the back of the rack where the inputs were. And what they had instead was two RCA cables coming out. It was a Y cable into a quarter inch that then terminated in another adapter that was an eighth inch. So literally it was all this expensive equipment with a little girl iPod plug.
Wow.
So I did. I plugged my laptop in, and without, you know, the MIDI or the controller or anything like that, I just played some dinner music or whatever while I set everything up, and it was fine. But yeah, that was the first time I realized she was kind of a control freak. And then later on, when I was playing the third slow song, it was Unchained Melody, which is a beautiful song. Always gets all the old people dancing, slow dancing at least. And I started to get a really weird feedback. And you know, it took me a while to figure it out. I finally figured out, oh, it's the low end feeding back on the mic. So I turned the mic off. But yeah, she came up to me and she was like, you got to turn that mic off. You got to know that. You got to turn the mic off. And I'm like, yeah, I know I'm supposed to turn the mic off. I forgot. You know, it was one switch that I forgot to, whatever, lady. But yeah, she was kind of telling me how to do my job.
Was she a bridezilla in-law?
Maybe. I don't know. She acted like it. I mean, it obviously wasn't her wedding, but she was, She was one of those people that has to
She probably didn't even know anybody. She probably just looks in the paper to see who's getting married and goes and tries to run everything and see if she can get away with it.
The small scale libido dominandi.
Yes. Yeah. The freelance volunteer libido dominandi.
All right. There you go.
Well, on that note, let's go to the market. Well,
One more example of the example. Yeah, that was the first anecdote. The second one's not as fun or interesting, but I think it's a supporting concrete detail. So there's been some tension at the pizza place I work at lately because the manager has kind of been freaking out and telling everybody that you're not allowed to have any weekend days off. I told you guys you're not allowed to take the weekends off. And now this is a place that, you know, it's a pizza delivery joint on UT campus. The majority of the delivery drivers are college students or grad students or recent graduates or people that are doing this as a part-time job. It's people that don't have this as their main gig or don't aspire to be career delivery drivers. This is the way they make some cash. And he's been really obsessive about everything lately. He's scheduled everybody for over 40 hours. Now, this place where everybody who drives is trying to do it part-time, he's scheduled them for more than 40 hours. And one of the ways he's gotten really overbearing is all of a sudden we're not allowed to eat inside of the store anymore. So, you know, often there are mistakes. You know, you put extra garlic on a thing and they said no garlic or something like that. So those end up in the back, and people, as they're rushing and doing their job, they'll grab a slice, take it with them in their car, or grab it and eat it. Apparently, that's not allowed to happen anymore. Can't eat. And now people need to eat, and they're busting their butts and they're sweaty, and the manager won't let you go somewhere else and get food. Or if you do it, you got to do it on the low. So he's basically saying, you work for me 10 hours today, not allowed to eat. Now, people's natural sense of law is like, no, I kind of got to eat. And it's completely fair if I eat. I know I'm working for you, but my body's still my body. Like you said, I carry around my personal bubble of ownership around me wherever I go. And that's just as true in a pizza store where you're working. So people humor him when he's around and act like they're not eating. But the minute he leaves, then everybody, you know, just gloms onto the pizza. And all of a sudden there's pizzas in the back, leftover pizzas, pizzas that didn't get eaten. And everybody's just eating them. You know, as soon as the illegitimate person that's watching you goes away, people completely ignore the rule because it's illegitimate to them. And I think that's another good example of, okay, yeah, we'll humor you when you're here because you might yell at us. But we don't accept your reasoning and we don't accept the silly edict you've made, so of course we're going to ignore it once you're gone. And that, you know, it's not as good as the wedding story, but I think that's another supporting example of the fact that if somebody makes an edict, it doesn't jive with people's natural compass in their hearts of what natural law is, and they don't say, huh, there's no justice in that, then they will go ahead and ignore the silly rule anyway.
Yeah.
And with that, we can go to the market.
All right.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
So I saw a good movie last night, Nima.
Yeah? What was it?
North by Northwest. It's a 1959 Hitchcock film, and the South by Southwest Music Festival is named after it. You said there's something else in town called North by Northwest. What is it in Austin?
I think there's a brewery restaurant, like a brew pub restaurant called North by Northwest on the northwest side of town. I'm not 100% sure. It might not exist anymore, but there's a restaurant by that name, I think, or at least there used to be.
I think conspiracy theorists would rather enjoy this movie. It's basically Cary Grant movie with some hot bimbo-y blonde. And basically, he's just a normal guy. And all of a sudden, like spies think he's some spy for the CIA. And it becomes this like battle between spies and the CIA. And he's caught in the middle of it. And everybody thinks he's someone he's not. And then he is framed for murder in the United Nations. And ends up, being chased through a field by a crop duster that's shooting at him with a machine gun. And then has the battle in the innermost chamber is a fist fight on top of Mount Rushmore. It's a good movie, man.
Okay. Cool.
The battle in the innermost nose.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. And I nailed it, man. We finished the movie. It's like 2 hours and 16 minutes long. And I was like, man, I love Hitchcock's film, but they're all too long. And I was like, I'll bet the studio tried to make him shorter, but he just wouldn't give up control, and they should have been shorter. And then I read the Wikipedia page on it, and it said, I quote, MGM wanted North by Northwest to be cut by 15 minutes, so the film's length would run under 2 hours. Hitchcock had his agent check his contract, learned that he had absolute control over the final cut, and refused. You know, it just has that feeling, and Hitchcock is just such a known for, and you can tell by watching his movies that he was just an over the top egomaniacal crazy genius with mommy issues that he doesn't want anyone to tell him what to do.
Nice. Well, that's a good example of where IP can get in the way, right? I mean, like we've said before, with Star Wars fans, they hate a lot of the newer episodes, which I guess are technically the earlier episodes, you know, because they're prequels. But they hate some of what George Lucas has done with the universe, you know, why not make your own cut? Why couldn't that have happened here? Why couldn't the studio have said, well, we're going to do a studio cut, you know, because we think it should be shorter, and Hitchcock could have done his actual cut, and the people who were Hitchcock diehards would have watched the Hitchcock actual cut, and the people who were casual movie fans could have seen the shorter cut.
I'm sure that's been done now on TV. I'm sure there's been shorter cut of it on TV interrupted by commercials, but yeah.
But again, to get that shorter cut, they probably had to go through IP lawyers and get through a bunch of legalese and things like that, you know, rather than just doing it because people would want it.
No, I think Ted Turner just bought the entire catalog and then like had people take watercolors and color everything in. No, it's actually a color film. It's really brilliant. I really like the late 50s, early 60s color film look. I don't know if it was Kodachrome.
Kind of oversaturated.
Yeah, oversaturated, all primary colors. Yeah, it looked really cool. And that's how photographs looked when I was a little kid. You know, like family snapshots, and it kind of influenced how I saw the world. Like I thought the world looked like that because it looked like that in pictures. Even when I looked out, it didn't. Ah. And you know, there's still this kind of thing that I have of this like religious connection with the universe that I have when I look up through the trees at the sky, and it's memories of being a little kid and looking up at the world. You know, because when you're a little kid, you don't travel a lot of the world. It's what's in your yard. And I've kind of gone full circle and traveled the world and been out in the streets a lot and gotten back to, I just want to be in my yard looking up through the trees into the sky. And it's kind of like, I feel like, but now I can talk to the world while doing it. Like I'm literally doing that, looking out the window right now through the trees. But I feel like, you know, it's kind of like that song, I see the moon and the moon sees me, the moon sees somebody I want to see. But instead of me looking at a constant, the sky and trees, even though it's different trees, I feel like instead of the I see the moon and the moon sees me, which is, you know, your loved ones on the other side of the country or something, and you're both looking at the same moon. It's like I'm looking up at this sky, and through some time continuum warp, it's the same moment of sky that little me is looking up through. So I'm kind of communicating with a young me while doing this, because when I was a kid, I had this incredible desire to speak to the world. And, you know, I've told many times about how I made little radio transmitters that could transmit a half block on the FM or on the AM radio. And, you know, from like as soon as I could hold a soldering iron, which was about 8 years old, I was making that kind of stuff. And we're about to get on radio. And I would encourage people to go to the freedomfiends.com website and look at that little radio countdown clock, the countdown to when the fiends start on radio, because it's a good thing. It's important. And we can, you know, if there's a collective unconsciousness, which is not the same as collectivism, it's kind of feeling something simultaneously, which people do on radio. If you look at that clock every day, it'll happen quicker.
Yeah. It'll happen quicker.
A watched clock never boils. It'll happen slower. Yes. No, man, it's pretty.
Are you going to go up to Casper Mountain and freeze yourself until radio time and then wake up and come back?
Like, is that a Cartman reference?
Yeah. Because he wants to play the Nintendo Wii. He just can't wait. Whee! He's got to go freeze himself.
Whee! Yeah. So we got some notes we haven't covered.
Oh, before you get to that, I just noticed something. Have you noticed this yet? In one of the things about the notes, I think we were talking about the Manchin Toomey Amendment. And on the Washington Post site, and I've sort of heard somebody reference this before, but I didn't notice what it was really. Have you heard of the Pinocchio rating?
No.
This apparently
how
to
much
me
of
is
a
hilarious.
Lie it is?
Yes. So I don't know if it's just Washington Post or if this is like a new
metric,
other kind of thing, a new metric that everybody's doing or what. But at the bottom of the story, it says fact or fiction. It's got a Barack Obama statement. The Barack Obama statement is, you can't stand up to China when all you've done is send them our jobs. It's attributed to Barack Obama. And then under that, it says, how accurate is this statement? And it's got four little Pinocchios you can click on. It says, choose a Pinocchio rating to find out how the fact checker graded this statement. That's great, man. It always warms the cockles of my heart when mainstream people realize and get that out. At least the market is asking for it, that, hey, these people, these politicians, they're liars. We all know they're liars. Oh, and on The Simpsons, I rarely watch The Simpsons anymore, but on an episode I watched on Hulu last night, Homer was trying to call for help because he needed some help for something. And so he's like, maybe I'll, because I guess God had failed him or something, or he felt kind of down on religion. And he's like, maybe I'll call Satan. And he looks at Marge and he goes, is that a 212 area code? Which I think is the area code for Washington,
or no,
D.C. Is it L.A.?
212?
I thought it was D.C.
It was New York, yeah, I think. Let me see.
I think it's Washington, D.C. Let's see. Let's fact check this before we get to the
I got it.
Ratings.
Speaking of fact checks, factcheck.com. Manhattan is 212.
Manhattan. Okay.
See, I've been calling more radio stations than you, so I know that.
Okay.
Factcheck.com or PolitiFact has a metric of like mostly false, mostly true, whatever, and the most extreme one is pants on fire. liar, pants on fire. Yeah.
Right. Good times. Oy. Okay. So yeah, that was my only comment on.
And then they have one that they use often, which is no such figure exists when people are quoting made up statistics.
Like the congresswoman who said we were going to lose 165 million jobs for the sequester, or some number that there wasn't that many jobs in Merca already.
Wow. Says a gun bill before the Senate would make it a federal felony to leave town for more than 7 days and leave someone else at home with your firearms. That's effed, man.
Jeez. That is awful. Like, you can't put him in a gun safe? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they shouldn't have any prior restraint on it, but, I mean, come on.
I don't leave town, so that doesn't affect me, but it's still horrifying.
Well, I leave town all the time, man, and that's awful.
Yeah, but you don't have any guns. You lost them in a voting accident.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the voting accident.
Yeah. You voted, lost your guns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just sent you a little link here on the Twitter. I would like you to read some of this. It is some of the most mind-blowing, you know, this article should be called "And These People Can Vote." Okay. This is a collection of tweets of people who thought Chechnya is the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia, which does not exist. There's people saying we need to nuke Czechoslovakia, and I'm like, you're gonna need a time machine to go back to the 60s to do that.
Yeah. There's this funny thing about Dick Cheney too. I forget the exact details, but he said something to that effect.
That's not funny.
When he was lying you into war, or not you, but when he was trying to lie everybody else into war about Iraq, he said like an Iraq official and an Al Qaeda official met in Czechoslovakia, and it didn't exist at that point. So that's how you knew it was a lie, because he was saying a made up country.
Oh, he's like Mr. Burns. He's like, the Prussian, I need to send this by overnight auto gyro to the Prussian consulate.
There you go. All right. So this is on public shaming. The subtitle is of the blog is Tweets of Privilege. And the headline is the definitive, quote, people who thought Chechnya was the Czech Republic collection. And it goes on, two brothers from Chechnya, that was the official word early morning on Friday, April 19th, 2013, as to who were behind the Boston Marathon bombings, Chechens. They dropped the suspect there, suspected of being behind the
Is that
the
news
Marathon
or is that
bombings.
A tweet?
How it should have read.
Is that a news outlet or a tweet or the article?
This is the article. This is public shaming. They missed the – I haven't gone into the tweets yet. This is how they set up the tweets. And I'll go on for them to continue setting up the tweets. So naturally, who do some brilliant citizens of the United States of America blame? The Czech Republic, of course. Here are those Twitter users who are brave enough to still have their tweets up for all to see. should we say tweeter names or just first
sure.
names or – Okay, fine. It's public knowledge. It's on the interwebs. There you go. Michael Matthews at Your Buddy Burns tweeted, I'm tired of this terrorist bullshit effing with our country. F it. Just nuke Czechoslovakia. Okay. Next up, we have Instrumental Stash at Hash Hits. That's his Twitter tag, Hash Hits. I can't believe that pair in the Boston bombing was not Towelheads. They are Czechoslovakian. Damn, F Czechoslovakia. Wow. All right. Next, we have Heartbreak E, trademarked, at Eric Derrick.
Trademarked. They're so proud of their stupid wrong tweets that they've trademarked.
Yeah, there you go.
They think they've trademarked their tweeting name.
Yeah, as if that works. All right. I wonder if the U.S. is going to invade Russia or Czech Republic or whatever for attacking the U.S.
So actually,
dripping with collectivism there, isn't that?
Actually, just putting TM on something is trademarking it. An R in a circle, a registered trademark, you actually have to take some action. But if you're engaging in interstate commerce with a TM next to it, and I guess they're exchanging in the interstate free commerce of stupid BS. So, yeah.
Stupid tweets. Okay. All right. Super Slayin at KJohnny500 tweeted, his dad said he was an angel, dot, dot, dot. Is that check for a-hole? All right.
Wow.
Then we have Caitlin Schuler at Caitlin Schuler. Some Czech mother effer is about to get lit up. Hashtag get him. All right. Sir Tweets a Lot at Sir Tweets a Lot 4. They're from Czechoslovakia. Towelheads in disguise. Hashtag Muslims. Right. Matt Marr at Marr What? There are like 9,000 cops searching for this F from the Czech Republic. He's going down. Tiptoe Silent at Miss Tippy. So the Boston Bombers were 19-year-old Russians of Czech descent. Why, Lord? Why, Lord, do you not understand geography? All right. Dr. Andy at Dr. Andy. This is just, well, I guess he's not a real doctor, but he bills himself as a doctor. Dr. Andy, the guys that bombed Boston were Czech? What is this, 1980? All right. And next up, here's a guy who deleted his first tweet when he was called out and then advocated for the destruction of the Czech Republic anyway. All right. And this is Just Colton. Czech Republic was responsible for the bombings, two brothers. And Snowflake said, F the Czech Republic, I hope we bomb them one day and wipe them out. So fee geep. I don't know what fee geep is. Oh, I think it's effed up. Some kind of internet thing for that. Man. Okay. So more than just the stupidity here is the collectivism, right?
Yeah.
I mean, thinking that some granny in some country that doesn't exist like Czechoslovakia or some geographical area you don't even know about, some person there who never hurt nobody should be blown to bits because two brothers whose dad was from there did something wrong or are suspected even of doing something horrible. That sums up the problem of statism, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
If you have no connection, but other than that you were born in the same place or have genes that descend from
and
the same
Václav,
place.
Man, Václav, our good friend Václav lives in the Czechoslovakia Republic, in the Czech Republic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People aren't their governments and people aren't the geographical area they come from. The Czech Republic isn't effing with the U.S., Cali Loops.
Neither
That's
is
not
Chechnya.
What's going on.
Neither is Chechnya.
Yeah, exactly. Neither is Chechnya. I mean, there's been nothing said about that these guys are foreign agents. And if a foreign army were to do something, I doubt they'd do it like this. I don't know, man. It just seems childish and silly and ignorant and collectivist, man. This is what socialism and statism does to people's brains. It prevents them from thinking properly about the response to horrible things, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
Just sad. Yeah. And so, more than the point of, hey, people are dumb. I think that sticks out to me. Another people are dumb thing about the whole Boston incident was, apparently, there's also a page. I haven't found it, but Scott Horton was talking about it. There's also a page of people wondering where Boston was and wondering what country it was in on Twitter.
People from where?
People from America being like, huh, Boston, what is that? In like England or something? Is that in Europe?
Wow.
Where's Boston at?
Wow, man.
Yeah, yeah. How do you not know that? Like, have you ever heard of the Boston Celtics? I mean, I know it's a weird way to say Celtic, but I mean, come on, man. At least everybody's seen a basketball game, maybe. If you're dumb and have never looked at a map, maybe you've heard of the Boston Celtics or heard about the Liberty. No, the Liberty Bell is, I guess, in Philadelphia. But yeah. Anyway, come on, man. You got to know where Boston is. You at least know it's in America. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and your point would be these people can vote.
Yeah, these people can direct guns and stealing and funding and armies by voting. And they can't even find a country that doesn't exist anymore on a map that's been out of date since the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they want to kill everybody in a country for the actions, possible actions, of two people from that country who are permanently in America.
Other thing that bugs me here is, okay, so they're not really Chechens anyway, right?
They're Americans. One of them got his American citizenship on September 11th last year. Did you hear about that?
They've been in the country for a long time, though. I mean, not just like they got here. I mean, it takes a long time to get your citizenship. I mean, didn't the 19-year-old...
They didn't just get off the turnip boat, what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, as far as I know, the 19-year-old, for the most part, grew up in America. I mean, I might be wrong on that, but that was my impression, was he went to an American high school and was your average teenager. And you don't call those people the country they're from. I mean... People shouldn't call me Iranian. I know I wasn't born there, but people make that mistake of saying that you're from, that you are wherever your ancestry is from. And when you're that young, when you're 19 and you spent, you know, a large portion of your life in America, especially the formative teenage years, I call you an American, man. Americans did the bombing or are suspected of doing the bombing.
Are you set up to play clips?
I am, actually. Yeah.
I just sent you one. It's more "and these people can vote." Yeah, and the Fiends do need Windows programmers, or a Windows programmer. So if you can program for Windows and want to help Liberty with a communications utility that will be free to all and not secret and open source and wonderful, drop us an email at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Yes. All right, definitely appreciate the stall there.
So this is a clip of some right-winger, as Nima would say, right-winger, you know, they get it right once a day. Stop clock is right once a day. This is a guy trying to get people to sign a petition to repeal the Second Amendment on the Santa Monica Pier. And he is actually a pro Second Amendment guy. And I just love the stupid questions he asks and the fact that people are like, okay. So go ahead and play this.
It really reminds me of a Man Show bit. And maybe this would be more left-wingy. But yeah. There's a Man Show bit where they go around with a petition saying, stop women's suffrage. Which is
the right to vote.
The right of vote for women.
I know, it sounds like suffering.
Yeah. I'd love to end women's suffrage.
Yeah, it sounds like suffering. But
yeah.
I don't know that that's a left-wing thing. I think it's a libertarian thing. Joe Rogan is a libertarian. I don't know if he was back then, but...
Yes, and I guess at that time it was Joe Rogan and... who's the guy that has the ABC late-night show now? Jimmy Kimmel, that's
yeah,
it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, well, here we go. This is from a YouTuber named Mark Dice, and we'll go ahead and play this. You're going to have to help me sound check it at first because I had to replug some
things. No, man, I'll just turn you up or turn you down.
You sure? All right, here we go.
We're going to just repeal the Second Amendment and take the guns away from the crazy right-wing white extremists and just make sure that only the illegal, unregistered guns stay on the street. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. By repealing the Second Amendment, what that'll do is we'll have a door-to-door gun confiscation against the white people, the right-wing extremists.
Okay.
Take away their guns. Well, birthday.
My birthday.
Yeah, your birthday. Yeah. Just repealing the Second Amendment, door-to-door gun confiscations. Then that way only the unregistered guns will be out, and we'll be much safer that way.
Got you.
Thank you. Thank you for supporting that.
No doubt.
Just a name and a signature. We're trying to just repeal the Second Amendment to make sure that only the criminals have the guns and get them out of the hands of the law-abiding citizens.
Right.
To repeal the Second Amendment. It's such an old-fashioned amendment. We're just making sure that the law-abiding gun owners have that right taken away.
All right.
Thank you so much. We're going to repeal the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Only the police and the military need to have guns. We can trust them. They've never done anything wrong. And we're just going to get the legal registered guns off the street.
You don't have to convince us, my friend.
This will remove all the law-abiding registered gun owners and then the criminal sign. The criminals won't turn their guns in, so they'll still have their guns after we repeal the Second Amendment. Thanks for supporting that. Come on, bro. You don't want the kids to die in another massacre like Sandy Hook, do you?
No, no, but you're just...
Come on,
I don't feel excited to do it. I'm sorry, man.
We're going to repeal the Second Amendment.
No, I don't want to.
And, well, come on. We want to help keep people safe. We can, trust... So. But you can't be trusted to own those guns. The police can be trusted, not you citizens, slaves.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
Thank you. A chance to win a free Xbox to repeal the Second Amendment?
Yeah, that's fine.
I can't do this with a straight face.
All right,
man.
All
right,
man.
Supporting the Lord.
Yeah.
Good times. This guy, Mark Dice, I recognized him. He's actually got a few other videos on YouTube that are pretty good. He's got one where he's on a busy public street. Within eyeshot is a coin dealer. And he's got a 1 ounce gold coin. I'm not sure if it's a Krugerrand or not, but something along those lines. Something that's worth at the time like $1,500 or something. And he's trying to sell it to people for $25. He's like, hey, I got to pay my light bill. All I have left is this 1 ounce gold coin. It's worth like $1,500. You can have it for $25, though. I'm just trying to get rid of it. And people won't take it. They don't think it's true at all. They're like, no. And he's like, no, you can go in and have it appraised right now, just right there at that coin dealer. It'll take 5 minutes. Go ahead. You want it? $25? You can make a $1,450 profit, $1,475 profit? No takers. And then he tries to give it away. Nobody will take it at that point either.
Wow.
He's also got another thing where he goes and tries to buy a taco, I think. I'm not sure if it's Taco Bell, but he goes to a drive-thru and tries to pay with it, with a 1 ounce gold coin.
Oh,
and
that was him? I've seen that.
They won't touch it either. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. This guy is called right wing on the Wikipedia page, but I don't know. I mean, they call Alex Jones right wing too. And I don't know if that applies. He seems to have a similar political ideology to Alex Jones, which, you know, if the right wing is starting to, you know, make jokes like, oh, only the police and the military can be trusted, they've never done anything wrong, then I have more hope for the right wing than I thought I had. I don't think it's accurate calling him right wing, though. Although, Michael Reagan, is he the right wing son of Ronald or the left wing dancer son? I think he's the right wing.
I don't know.
The adopted son. Syndicated talk show host. He's a right winger. He called for the death of Mark Dice. So if Michael Reagan wants you dead, I think you're doing something right. He wanted him dead for saying that, for handing out pamphlets to Marines saying that the 9/11 attacks were an inside job. And Michael Reagan was extremely offended.
Livid.
By not just saying that 9/11 was an inside job, but trying to hand some free speech to U.S. Marines.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some people, or a lot of people, some people, you people. Well,
you people.
It's unfortunate that people are stuck in this two-dimensional thought of the political spectrum as the left.
It's actually
right.
One-dimensional.
It's actually three-dimensional, right?
No, I mean, the one you're talking about, the left-right, that's one-dimensional.
Oh, right, you're right. Yeah,
the libertarian
one
that goes up and down and left and right is two-dimensional. And
I've always
said there should be a spherical one, a three-dimensional one, to cover the fact that you know, libertarians don't always agree on abortion or... I really think that's about the only one. I mean, some people say libertarians disagree on immigration, but I think that that's not real libertarians. That's libertarian Republicans. But real libertarians who are basically anarchists, basically the only thing they ever can really disagree on, honestly, is abortion, I think.
Yeah. Although to me, what it boils down to, and the reason I like the, what's it called, the Nolan chart, two-dimensional thing where the up and down axis.
It's groundbreaking, man. It really is. And it's not that new. Yeah. It's from the 70s, I think, but.
Right, right. But the most pertinent question to me is, should the state do something or not about this issue? Not what you feel about this issue.
Yeah, it's really a one question. It should really be a one question thing. Yeah,
right.
And if you answer correctly, you know, you get to live your life free and live here. If you don't answer correctly, we have you sent to the libertarian reindoctrination camps where they put you in a room and feed you free milk and make you listen to the Fiends and Ben Stone at excruciating volumes for 72 hours at a time with 1 hour naps in between.
Do unto others, right? Because that's what they would have done to us.
Ooh, there you go. It's the very Christian answer. Libertarian reindoctrination camps are. And yeah, we're mostly kidding. And with that, I think we're going to go away for a few days. But you can't get rid of us. Bye. You can't keep a good fiend down. And we'll be back on radio.
Peace.
Radio. Oh, yeah.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. The world.